Delighted to have the opportunity to share with you this evening. Your first assignment this evening is to tell me after the study is completed, was it fair? We're going to be dealing with a topic that has lots of different multifaceted layers to it, and we're going to be asking you, young people, those of us who are old people, Harrison, I got you right here, buddy. We're going to be asking, is it fair? And so as Billy was kind of reviewing the PowerPoint the other day, said, oh, I see we might need to be making some, and I'll just leave it there and let Billy finish it for you. And so as we consider that, some of you are IT people, some of you are in missile defense, some of you deal with technology all of the time. In fact, most of us deal with technology every day. And we're going to focus on media, whether it is good or bad, or a little bit of both, depending upon how we use it. And so it's very, very important that I be balanced in presentation of this information, and it's important for you to critique whether this is balanced. There have been elders in several places that have asked me to present this information, and so you are my critique to help me to improve and to correct or to eliminate certain aspects of what might be presented. I'd like to suggest to you that God has always used media, and some examples of media are the very garden that God produced for Adam and Eve, and all the splendors of the visual and panoramic messages of God from what has been created. The heavens and the earth declare the glory of God. God's world declares His glory, and God's word declares His glory. Even the thunder and lightning and the smoke on Mount Sinai would declare God's glory in a very spectacular way from a video and audio means. When Jesus calmed the storm and said, "Be still," that was quite a presentation of God's media power and His visual demonstrations. The very transfiguration of Jesus would have been an awesome techno experience. And God has produced, may I suggest to you, the very best movie ever. Wouldn't you love to see the revelation in movie format? But you know, that would ruin it for us. It's kind of like whenever you read a really good book and you have your own imagination, then when you see the movie, it's like the movie's never as good as the reading. And so God has always used media. He's always used technology, and He will continue to do so. So I ask you, in regard to technology, is it good or bad? I've got this in my pocket. It says on it, old timer. This is a tool. Is it a good tool or is it a bad tool? Right? Just depends on who's using it and for what they're using it. I'd probably get thrown out of school if I walked through the security with this in my pocket today. When I ask old men, do you have a pocket knife? They say, do I have my pants on? And so they carry that tool around all the time. And you know, they can do some amazing things with that tool. Good tool, bad tool. Just depends. Well, I've got another tool over here. And this is a new tool for me. I have moved up in the world. You'll be impressed, young people. This is a 6S. My old 4 was just burning up. My wife had a 3 until last week. So that kind of tells you some of the prejudice of maybe I'm not quite as high tech as some of you are. But as you think about this, is this a good tool or a bad tool? Depends on who uses it and how they use it. And so both are tools, and we have to decide how we're going to use the tools that God has provided for us. And so as we consider those things, use of it determines the moral effect, whether it's going to have a good outcome or a bad outcome. We live in a very technical and very digital age. And for some of you, you can say, I don't have a computer, I don't have a cell phone, and I don't want one, and I don't need one. You know what? That's fine. You can choose not to ever touch one, and you can still go to heaven. And you can say, I am going to try to learn everything I possibly can about technology because I can use that to magnify our God. And please do so. Tremendous benefits with the technological advancements of the 21st century. And so as we consider those kind of things, we're going to have to decide how we're going to use the tools. Everybody sitting here has an agenda tonight. And young people, there are old people here that are wanting to say, give it to them. really tell them what they need to know. And mostly I'm going to say, hey, moms and dads, who's in charge here? And I'm going to say to you as one, we'll just say more seasoned citizen said last night, the old people need this too. And so every age is bombarded with technology. We all need to consider how we're going to use it. And so let's just get right at it. As we think about Jesus speaking about those kind of things, we want to think about consumption here. And as we consider that, Jesus says, do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man. Smartphone doesn't defile a man. What you look at and what you read and what you listen to on it can. And so as we consider those kind of things, Proverbs tells us in chapter 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for it's the wellspring of life. You care about what water you drink? Of course you do. Some of us used to drink out of a cistern. Or we would drink out of a well, out of the side of a hill, and we wanted to make sure there wasn't a dead possum laying in that water. We wanted purified water. You know, I'm concerned that we might be more concerned about eating good food versus good intake and consumption in regard to technology. We might be concerned about our GMOs. Perhaps there's some other things to be concerned about as well. We are God's temple. Or the temple of the living God, and God has said, I will be with them and walk with them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Therefore, come out from them and be separate, says the Lord. Touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you. We're God's special temple, and we're concerned about what goes in to that temple. And so we are to have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. We have to be very careful then how we live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Now, we've got a 3-minute experiment. We're going to find out if technology can be used for good. And so in the next 3 minutes, you're going to be evaluating a technological presentation, and you're going to decide, is this good or is this bad? Some of you know our friend Scott Smelser. He does, and you can maybe a little later put in your particular device, 3-minute Bible study. And
welcome to 3-minute Bible study on biblical history. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and God created man and woman. Creation was good. Then Adam and Eve rebelled and fell from God. Wickedness increased, and judgment came in the flood on all but Noah and those in the ark. Noah's descendants were dispersed at the Tower of Babel, and God chose Abram and his seed to receive the promised land, to become a nation, and to bless all nations. The promise continued through Abraham's son Isaac and his son Jacob, also known as Israel. Jacob had 12 sons, one of which would rise to the right hand of power in Egypt. The Israelites came down to live in Egypt, but later became enslaved for about 400 years. Through Moses, God delivered them and made a covenant with them at Sinai, where they received the law and instructions for the tabernacle. But being unfaithful, they were detained in the wilderness for 40 years, and the next generation took the promised land under Joshua. Judges then led the people until Samuel's day, when Saul was appointed the first king of Israel. After Saul's rejection, God chose David to be king and promised that his seed would be a son to God, would build a house to God, and his kingdom would be established forever. David's immediate son Solomon did build the temple, but the promise of a kingdom forever would be part of the messianic hope in Israel. After Solomon's death, the nation divided into northern and southern kingdoms, both largely unfaithful and ignoring the prophet's calling for repentance. As prophesied, both nations fell, Israel to Assyria in 722 BC and Judah to Babylon, along with the destruction of the temple in 586. After the Babylonian captivity, many returned to the land with Zerubbabel and Ezra and rebuilt the temple, followed by Nehemiah, who rebuilt the city walls. 400 years pass, and Israel looks for the promised Messiah to come. The New Testament brings us to the first century with John the Baptist announcing that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And he identifies Jesus of Nazareth as the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world. The four Gospels record the teachings of Jesus, his work with the apostles, and the miracles that identify Jesus as the Messiah or Christ. At the end of his life, he establishes the Lord's Supper, surrenders to his enemies, and his disciples flee. In fulfillment of Psalm 22 and Isaiah 53, he is tortured, crucified, and buried. But on the third day, the tomb is found empty, and he appears to the apostles. He tells them to wait for the Holy Spirit, and he ascends to the Father. Acts 2 records the day of Pentecost when the Spirit falls on them and Peter preaches Jesus as the risen Christ. 3,000 Jews are baptized that day in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of their sins. The church grows quickly, but soon faces intense persecution from opponents like Saul, later known as Paul. But after an encounter with Jesus, Paul himself is converted and begins preaching Christ, helping spread the gospel far beyond Israel. The letters of Paul, along with texts from James, Peter, John, etc., round out the rest of the New Testament. That's your three-minute overview of Old Testament and New Testament history.
Good use of technology or bad use of technology? See, when I'm on campus studying with young people, there are young people I've studied with who said, I don't have a Bible, never had a Bible. And if I remember one comment that Nick made, he said, I've never even seen a Bible. But he had a smartphone, and I could say, could you punch in 3-minute Bible study? And he first then begins to see the big picture of what God has done. Is that a good use of technology? You decide. It's a use of technology. And so for us to just simply say, technology's bad, is an unfair and an inaccurate statement. And so as we consider that, we want to focus on concerns in regard to consumption of technology. Technology's been around forever, since the world began. But the technology I'm thinking of right now kind of went like this. And so Samuel Morse in the 1840s started with virtual communication. In 1844, Morse sent his first telegraph message from Washington, D.C. to Baltimore, Maryland. By 1866, a telegraph line had been laid across the Atlantic Ocean from the U.S. to Europe. Although the telegraph had fallen out of widespread use by the start of the 21st century, it had been replaced by the telephone, the fax machine, the internet. It laid the groundwork for communications revolutions that have led to these later innovations. By the way, there were some people in the United States who were very vocal against the development of a telephone. We don't have time to evaluate that at this point. But what Samuel Morse said in that first telegraph message he sent was, what has God wrought? What has God worked? What has God accomplished? And so this technological breakthrough resulted in simultaneous, instantaneous communication, and new rules had to be developed to regulate telegraph operations and telegraph operators. So guess what comes up by 1890? The book comes out, Wired Love. Because what had happened is, telegraph operators were learning to flirt and to date and to communicate certain messages by means of telegraph. And you thought you were cool when you started texting. They were texting 100 years before you were even born. And so as we think about those things, all new technologies bring us to make some determinations about how they're to be used. One of the new ones that we might consider is the idea of being captivated by our modern technologies. Let's listen for a moment and then make some observations.
We live in a media-saturated society.
The screen time for the average American child is over 53 hours a week.
The digital age has swept into young adults' lives like a tidal wave.
Media has taken my generation captive.
Media was very big in helping me to escape the realities of my life.
I was captivated by television. It dictated what I was going to do and when I was going to do it.
It's a bigger addiction than drugs a lot of times.
There is a great need for concern.
Have we entered a techno-utopia or a virtual prison?
Pretty much my life consisted of media in some way, shape, or form.
I just got so sucked up in it, it just kind of took over part of my life.
Is our social experience richer and deeper, or more shallow and artificial?
I was on Facebook every day, all day long.
We stand a chance of roboticizing relationships.
The trivia of youth are amplified by these digital tools.
Men are trying to escape into the world of games.
We've arranged the culture to trick their brains into thinking that they've done something when in fact they haven't.
You can't think, I'll watch and I'll listen, but I won't do.
Is there hope of finding freedom?
Found that there's more of a freedom without media, in all honesty.
When I was able to let go,
there was such incredible freedom.
This world would be a completely different place if we weren't all glued to a screen.
There's a need to break free from these chains that bind us.
When you unplug, all of these things that are part of God's design for us begin to be restored.
That video I have with me, if you would like to see it, I would encourage you to just type in Captivated when you go to Google, and you'll find it. And the young man that introduced me to this information is a double E. You UH guys know exactly what I'm talking about. Electrical engineer. And he now has five children. But he is very digitally inclined, and he's the one who is concerned about the influence of those technological devices in the lives of his children. And so just to review some of the things that you've now assimilated, Kirby Anderson tells us that there are more TVs than there are people per household. He tells us that the average child will spend between 18,000 to 22,000 hours of television by the time they're 18. And what I notice is I hear from parents about their comments about, my child's not getting his homework done, he's not getting any rest, and his television's on all night long. Is that the child's problem? May I ask who bought that television? May I ask who placed that television in that child's room? May I ask who pays the electric bill? Who's in charge here? Those are questions that parents need to address. Yes, children need to discipline themselves, but sometimes we have to help them in those areas. You heard David Walsh, a world-renowned neurologist, and he talks about what this does to a child's mind. He says the average child spends 53 hours a week in front of some kind of a screen. Now, I understand for a lot of you at school, man, you're in front of a screen a lot of times. Preachers are in front of a screen a good portion of the day with all of the research that we're trying to do. But I want you to also be concerned about the fact of what those screens do to our ability to give focused attention. Dr. Walsh will give the illustration this way. If you're reading a very fascinating novel and you're very focused on that, but a mouse runs across by the baseboard, where are your eyes going to go? Your eyes are going to be stimulated by what is moving. And so you're not going to be able to maintain focused attention if there is stimulation by movement. So I want you to be thinking about the gaming that is coming. And I want you to be thinking about the fact that this is not just some preacher prude that's making these observations. Dimitri Christakis, who is the pediatrician at Seattle Hospital, has been very concerned for quite a while with the screen time of those who are under 2 years old. He has shown statistically that children who do screen time prior to 2 years old typically have significantly less focused abilities by the time they get to kindergarten. Now, moms, I am very sympathetic. I have grandchildren, and I know that at some point in the day, you got to get a shower, right? And certainly, if you could just plug something in for a few minutes to let them watch, surely that wouldn't harm them. I'm just sharing with you the research. Please feel free to Google Dimitri Christakis. And please follow along to 2012, where he talks about why television is bad for babies' brains. The American Association of Pediatrics strongly recommends no screen time for children under two. What they have noticed that does help children with focused attention are things like reading to them, singing to them. Those things help the child with their focused attention. I asked someone last night, did anybody give you a copy of the Beginner's Bible? And I said, yeah, Jeff and Martha gave it to us. Now, I was afraid to say that because if you're a young couple and you got a baby and you didn't get one, sorry, Jeff and Martha, we'll cover that one. But the Beginner's Bible is a great way for a dad of a little infant to sit there and read about what great things God has done. Cindy was reading to our children before they were born. When I walked into the hospital after our first one was born, there she is reading to the 1 day old. And so reading is a great thing to do for your children. Singing with your children is a great thing to do. Pew Research tells us that there's an alarming number of teens that sleep with their cell phone on under their pillow at night. Complaining about the beep that they keep hearing when their child are getting messages at night. Do you know why your teen daughter feels like she has to have her cell phone on under her pillow at night? Because she has to find out whether she's been unfriended by somebody on Facebook that night. And so in the pamphlets that have been prepared for you tonight, there is a contract. There is a cell phone contract between parents and children. I encourage every one of you to pick that up. We know some extremely fine young men in Middle Tennessee, and what we marveled at, as they deal with the same kind of temptations everybody else does, their mom and dad collects those cell phones at night, and they stay in the parents' bedroom throughout the night. And I'm talking about teenage boys who drive. I'm just challenging us to be serious about those kind of things. And so one of the concerns that Dr. Jeff Myers points out in regard to the effect on the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, that's the executive center of the brain, is that video games stimulate the pleasure center of the brain, but you have a sense of accomplishment without ever doing anything. He said it's similar to the effect of crack cocaine. And so I remember being in another state, I'll not mention the state, being at a college community, and one of the gamers, one of the big-time gamers in that area who was sitting there that night, wanted to argue with that particular finding. Oftentimes, we are playing those games so intensely, we feel like we're actually really accomplishing something. But there's been nothing materially manufactured that is beneficial to mankind. Please feel free to challenge that observation. But as we think of those kind of things, then we are concerned, as Dr. Walsh had said, that neurons that fire together wire together. And so we're concerned about the media intake. This is Nielsen. Their estimation is 3,339 text messages are sent per month by the average teen. That's a lot of text. Mark Bauerlein mentions the effect that that has to screen out parents. Screens out the parents. You know, some of us used to be able to speak in a different language than our parents to screen them out so they wouldn't know what we were saying. Parents, do you know what communication is going on by the text your children are sharing? Do you ever bother to even read what your children are communicating by text? Those people who focus on what do my peers say tend not to give attention to what do my parents say. A couple of groups that we would expect to communicate in regard to television. In the 1960s, it was described as a barren wasteland. The same man who made that comment in the 60s was asked about 10 years ago, what would you say about TV? He says it's a toxic dump. Tim Winters is going to describe it as toxic. I don't know what's on TV. We choose not to have cable. It's a tremendous blessing. We do have access. We do have a television. We have very limited access. So I can't speak to what all might be available on television. Then there's these comments in regard to YouTube. I thought Bauerlein was way off course when he said, YouTube is all about self. That's what I said the first time I presented this information. And the techies at Purdue took me to task. And so they should. Because, you know, YouTube has a lot of good stuff in it. If you're trying to build something, if you're trying to fix something, if you're trying to repair something, man, you can type YouTube and it can tell you how to do the plumbing. YouTube has a lot of really good, useful information. And part of that is the communication of the Word of God. And so let's not just across the board bash some kind of technological convenience because there might be somebody who uses it for that which is not appropriate. In regard to content, as we think about what is it, not how much, but what is it that we take in video and audio media? It was Phil Chalmers who made the observation after 25 years of just evaluating this content that he observed that the violence in videos He said there are two groups, as you can see on the screen, two groups that deny its impact, those who are addicted and those who sell it. Now, I'm not a gamer. Don't even care for it. That's just a personal thing. I know that lots of young people, especially young men, are gamers. And I have this mental picture burned in my brain of an 8-year-old sitting in just his undies. His mom and dad have split. I'm sitting there trying to help his dad. And the boy has his headphones on, and he's fighting with other guys, and he's killing numerous people. And all he has to do when the game is over is push reset. And the war begins again. Now, I want to suggest to you that you can become desensitized to violence when you participate in it over and over. But when you pick up a real weapon, like my .30-06, and you pull the trigger, and that deer takes that slug, there's blood, real blood, and somebody dies. And so I think Chalmers is right in what he has to say about Christians and violence, and the concerns in regard to violence. Dick Rolfe, the founder of the Dove Group in regard to evaluating movies, makes these observations. He said before 1968, there had never been a movie shown that was now the new R-rated movies. In the last fourth of the 20th century, there were 12 times more R-rated movies than G-rated movies produced. G-rated movies were 11 times more profitable than the R-rated. But Hollywood said, we're pushing the R, even though we're not making money. Because they had an agenda. I ask you for a simple test to just ask a basic question. Would Jesus watch this with me? Would I invite Jesus to watch this with me? I think these are really serious questions for those of us who are claiming an alliance with Jesus Christ. Because what we're often told by young and not so young is it doesn't affect me. How do you know it doesn't affect you? Are you numb to vulgarity and violence? My next question is, why doesn't it affect you anymore? And moms and dads, we can know exactly what our kids are going to see before they see it. All we have to do is go to Kids in Mind. All we have to do is click on screenit.com, and you will know the vulgarity, you will know the violence, you will know the sex, you will know all of the scenes, you'll know exactly the kind of thing your child is going to see. If you care to know it, would Jesus go with you? When kids say it doesn't affect me, there's some people who would disagree with that. Those who spend $3.5 million for a 30-second ad at the Super Bowl are going to disagree with the effect. I want you to think about expenditures for video games. These are old stats, and I own that right up front. When Halo 3 came out, $170 million was spent in the first 24 hours purchasing Halo 3. When Grand Theft Auto came out, there was an estimated $230 million spent in the first 24 hours. When Call of Duty Black Ops came out, $360 million were spent in the first 24 hours. Somebody thinks it matters. First time I presented this information, I talked about Grand Theft Auto. And I said, I guess that's about stealing cars. One of the young men up at Purdue took me aside and said, Alan, it's a lot more than stealing cars. Now, some of you know because you played the game. You've known the violence. You've known the attitude toward authority. You know the efforts to try to kill those who are in authority. And you know the vulgarity and the sexual innuendos. And then what crushed me about a year ago presenting this information in another state was men who I highly regarded as spiritual men say, oh yeah, we play Black Ops at lunch at work. Do you know what that stuff is? Have you seen that stuff? Would you really watch that, play that game? Would you invite Jesus to take one of the controls? A recent one that you may be aware of is Battle Royale. Fortnite. Over 47 million people have been playing that. I just clicked on the very first page. And I knew I needed to click out real quickly. I didn't want my wife seeing it. I didn't want Jesus seeing it. And quite frankly, hopefully I'm to the point where I didn't want to see it either. But 47 million are seeing it and are playing the game. If you're looking for help, there's a site called Net Nanny. I think that's going to be in some of the information you pick up tonight. Net Nanny and Zift. And there are parents who may not claim everything you understand about Jesus Christ who are going to say this is really, really harmful for adults and children. In fact, Jeff Myers makes the observation that 10% of children are addicted to video games, and parents are implicitly accepting their children's crippling addiction. And school children's viewing is self-regulated. Nobody controls what the child watches. Parents, educators, no one. Now, to be fair, there are IT people in the audience who work with schools. And you do everything you can to try to screen out the bad. What I'm finding from young men who are honest is whatever filters are placed on their devices, they find a way around them. There has to be some self-regulation in regard to those matters. And so to consider in that regard, some of you know very well because you know and have experienced post-traumatic stress disorder. Major Phil Willis, the Army chaplain, remembers that as well. He commented in this documentary on the trauma. He had a man coming in and says, I just can't rest. I just can't sleep. I am just always upset. I'm always anxious. The guy was a mechanic. He had never been outside the wire. But he was so distressed with post-traumatic symptoms. And Mr. Willis said, you've been playing video games, haven't you? He said, yes. The video games had put him into a stress trauma. And he had never been in combat. And then Mr. Willis went on to observe that one of the insurgents came into the chow hall. He looked like everybody else, but he blew himself up and killed 20 troops, and then several others were damaged. But he just looked like he was one of us. Robert Pittman makes the observation years ago about MTV. He says, we don't just shoot for 14-year-olds, we own them. Media is not neutral. Those who are controlling the media have an objective, first to entertain and then to control. And I think Mr. Chalmers is correct when he makes the observation that God does not think it's cool that we entertain ourselves with violence, murder, and mayhem. In fact, he quotes Psalm 11 and verse 5, the Lord hates the one who loves violence. Proverbs says there are things that the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil. I'm pleading with you guys. I'm seeing what's happening to young men. You are seeing it on the nightly news. You're seeing it in the schools. Men and boys who have played all these violent video games don't realize that when they take a 45 or they take a 9mm or whatever else they're using, that it's going to cause real death. And there is no reset button. Your fellow students are dead forever as far as this life is concerned. And so let's be concerned about those regards. And let's think about, is this really something Jesus wants me to feed my mind with? In contrast, it was interesting what was on the screen as we walked in tonight. Here's some really valuable videos. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. Put God's truths all over the place. Outside, inside, everywhere, seeing the greatness of our God. And so as I suggest to you, as the young lady that you saw talking about Facebook, she said it was an idol to me. She confessed it was an idol in her life. She said she was disconnected from God. She admitted that it was hard to disconnect from Facebook. She said it was so enchanting. It allowed her a persona that was not real. She said it created shallow surface relationships. And it became a replacement for real relationships. WTHR up in Indianapolis stated not long ago that social networking was one of the leading causes of divorce. One in three divorces in England is attributed to Facebook. One in five in the United States. Julie Andrews, not Sound of Music, Julie Andrews, an attorney, stated that there have been several cases that I have been involved in where they find out, lo and behold, their spouse has a dating profile. Remember Ashley Madison? I see a lot of couples, she said, coming in with affairs, or sometimes just emotional affairs, that are a result of Facebook or Twitter. It often starts with a simple friend request. The biggest thing I've seen is people reconnecting with people from their past. Innocently saying, oh, this is somebody I dated once back in college. But when you see it completely pull a marriage apart, there's a reason why these people are in your past. Now, we're not talking to 15-year-olds now. We're talking to the 55 and 65-year-olds. And may I say to you that online dating services can work really well. I know a couple that are in their 80s. They're both committed to the Lord. They're both Christians. And they met on a dating profile. They met online. It's not necessarily bad technology. It's how you use it. And so I ask you to just be careful. Monitor how much time you're on Facebook and how useful that is in the larger scope of things. As Maggie Jackson said, she fears that relationships become roboticized. And so perhaps what we need to think about in a 21st century addition to what Jesus had to say, if Twitter causes you to sin, log off. And perhaps a lot of us would like to think of those who are in authority, would you please get off your Twitter account? The Bible's rather blunt about evil companionships corrupt good morals. Jared Jackson's pretty straight shooting in what he has to say here. He says the reason we need to be aware of our companionships is because we tend to act like those with whom we frequently visit. Sadly, most folks choose associations that entertain rather than edify. And he goes on to say this. He says, if your teenager hangs out on social media with girls that like to flash their delicates from behind private doors in their own home while parents snooze in front of TV, don't be surprised to find pics of your own teen soon on display for all of Twitter's, I think he overestimates, 220 million millennials to come out on with the most hurtful words imaginable. Older folks, I'm not talking to teens now. This is not just a teen problem. I know people in their 30s. I know people. I'm talking about followers of Jesus Christ who take pictures of themselves and post them to attract others. It's evil and it's destructive. Please think about that cell phone agreement that you're about to read. I had a grieving parent tell me not too long ago. He said, I wish I had never given my children cell phones. Cell phones not the problem. But I will tell you that those old flip phones that would only take calls or only take text were not nearly as dangerous as the computer I'm holding in my hand. Do you know when the typical young man is first exposed to pornography? Do you know what device is used for his first exposure to pornography? Two different stats. One say the boy is 9. The other say he's 10 with his first exposure to pornography. And it comes through a smartphone. If he doesn't have one, his friend at school does. And all parents know the pressure of, well, everybody else has got one. And this is the opportunity for you to say, so, you're not everybody. You belong to me, and we belong to the King. Children for millennia have survived without cell phones, and so have adults. I understand the concern that you have as a parent for the safety of your child. And if they're out on some desert road, you want to know if the tire's flat and you want to get to them. Or you want to be able to contact them. I get that. But I'm asking you to think about, do they really need all of the technological devices associated with a smartphone as a young teen? You have to make your call. But you also have to know what you're handing them. And the simplest way I know to explain that is when you hand a child a smartphone, you're handing them a poisonous snake. Now, that poisonous snake doesn't bite every day. Sometimes he's caged. But when you hand them that phone, that snake will bite. And the poison will permeate their mind. I have had young men plead with me. I have his face in my head right now, tears streaming down his face. I just wish my dad would take my phone away. I've had young men say, I just wish my dad would get rid of the cable, because young men are dying with the pornographic expressions that they're seeing all around them, and it's because dad won't quit. It's either because dad's got the same problem and he doesn't want to cut off his access, or he won't admit that I am handing my son a snake and it's killing him. And I hate what the devil's doing in that regard. And I'm looking for some men to protect the boys. So, would I watch it with Jesus? Improve my knowledge or my moral strength? Does it result in peace and tranquility in my mind and in my home? As Andrew said, there is an unbreakable link between what we see and what we hear and what we think and what we do. Children, school children. Some children, due to some factors beyond their control, need medication. Let's just get that out front. They need the meds to help them to cope. But in this particular case that Jeff Myers observes, in regard to those who the medical professions have identified as ADHD, what the principal asked six sets of parents to do for their children was to try these particular regimens, as you can see on the screen. 3 nutritious meals every day. Had to explain what nutritious meant. Weeknight bedtime, 9 p.m. Weekends, 10 p.m. Video time, screen time per week, 30 minutes. That's per week. 1 hour of exercise every day outside, 3 hours on weekends with parental participation. The result in this particular case was, with these inner city youth and their parents, none of those students needed medication. When they had parents who gave them good nutrition, gave them food, exercised, and exercised with them, they were just fine at school. But as we consider that, then, the challenge of being unplugged and the very warfare that could come if you try to take away the tools. I think one of you, as you walked in, wanted to know, are you going to talk to the kids about, you know, giving up your devices? I think I need to talk to the parents here. Kids are going to be hesitant to give up their devices because 53 hours a week, they're using them. But who gave them that freedom to use them? And so some of the benefits that come from being disconnected is some real communication in family, some sense of peace, some tranquility, some mental stimulation, finding good replacements, and some meditation. So in conclusion, and I know you've been waiting to hear that, let's do some resolving to create in me a clean heart and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Let's think about things that are true, things that are noble, things that are just, things that are pure, things that are lovely, things that are of good report. If there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. There's some good stuff that we can find through our technology. We can take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, and we can approve the things that are excellent. We can learn to distinguish and make good choices. concluding, I want us to emphasize the positive effects of media. I don't know any church that does it better than Jordan Park. Ever since I lived in Cullman, you guys were doing the correspondence courses. You were doing computer interactive correspondence courses. You were mailing them. You were sharing the gospel message with lots of people. You have extremely talented people here with IT experience. And you can use that for all kinds of good stuff. I know of one congregation that a couple years ago, 9 people were brought to Christ because they saw the website. Young people typically aren't going to walk through those doors. They're going to click on your site, and within 15 seconds, they're going to decide whether they want to check out anything more. Your website is a tremendous tool to point people to Jesus. I know of a little congregation back where I grew up where the last count was 2 years ago, 123 countries were live streaming in the message of the gospel. You're doing live streaming. I had people walk in last night and say, I heard what you said Sunday morning. I couldn't be here. It's tremendous tools. These are technological tools that God has placed within our realm of influence. And so from everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much will be asked. Went a little bit longer this evening. Not going to apologize, but I do want you to deal with me when you walk out. Was I fair? Did I teach truth, balance? And if you come out angry, I've had young men just come out just sweating bullets because they're addicted. And I've had their parents say, you don't know how many thousands of dollars we've spent buying that stuff for our son. I've had young men come and say, please take it away from me. Please throw it away. Hundreds, hundreds, hundreds and hundreds of dollars of video stuff that had defiled them. Please get rid of it. I'm pleading with you dads. I'm pleading with you parents. Please help your children with a terrible addiction that is destroying their ability to cope in any real way. And if this is not a problem for you, God bless you. But please be merciful and compassionate for those of us who have had those challenges. And let us see Jesus and point people to Him who can cleanse us from every sin and restore us and bring us to be a new creation in Him. If you're not in Jesus, won't you come and learn more about how to serve Him, how to live for Him, how to walk in Him, and have a heart that is right with God.